The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
So Maxine Waters says there's something psychologically wrong with Bill O'Reilly. And I don't know if you saw what CNN, they had one of the Fox women on CNN last night that wanted to talk about Bill O'Reilly. And at least in this case, I don't understand it. I don't understand it. I want to tell you today, I don't want to tell you anything. I'm going to ask you some questions. And we begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Yesterday was a weird day for me because it was like you know, Fox Day for me yesterday, because I'm friends with Bill O'Reilly and had him on my mind, and with him leaving, I have a lot to tell you today. Stories I'm going to tell you today about the Bill O'Reilly that I know that I have not shared with you. And I want to share some of the things that they're saying on television and just ask you a few questions. But also Jack, who used to be my audio guy on the floor at Fox, Jack and Oscar and the wee little one, Aaron, we had a great relationship. And there were others at Fox that worked on the floor. But the three of us... Jack came yesterday, and he's a guy who has worked at Fox forever. And he said, "Glenn, you just changed my life." He said, "I had no confidence, and nobody had ever asked me to my opinion on a show." And he said, "Nobody ever included." He said, "It's the only show I've ever worked on where I thought we created this show." And I said, "'Cause Jack, we did. We all worked together on it. We did create the show." And so I want to preface this with, I'm not dismissing anything that anyone says. You know, every time somebody makes a charge against somebody, you need to look into it and you need to figure out if it's true or not. But I am really concerned that we're living in a world where you can pretty much say anything about anyone, and if they're on the wrong side of things, you can destroy them. But I care about the crew. I care about the people who are on the floor. I don't run a company, and I've just made several points, and I'm going to unfortunately do it again to the talent. I have done several meetings with talent and with the whole company where I have said, "I don't care who you are, if you treat talent poorly, or, talent sorry, not part. Talent, if you treat the floor, you as talent, treat the floor people poorly, you have no place here."
Because you can treat Jeffy poorly, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. Yeah. We're not treating him poorly. We're treating him as...
Well, we're treating him better than the rest of his life.
Yes.
I mean,
this is a... You know, yes, it's a slave ship, but it's the best slave ship he's ever been on. Mm. So that's a different story. Mm. And we try to do the right things. So I don't excuse people's behavior. However, I want to tell you a couple of things. Can we start with the CNN clip from Anderson Cooper last night? Do you have that, Pat? Listen to this. Now, this is a woman who worked at Fox. Listen.
Well, I mean, I think that it's stunning because Bill O'Reilly was Fox News. He had so much power there, and it was sort of unthinkable that he would ever leave there except on his own terms. And I did his show regularly for a long time, and you know, I was thinking about an incident that had happened early on in my career there, where I was on air actually with Margaret Hoover, who's at CNN now, on a regular segment. We were on every Monday, and he got Margaret's name wrong, and Margaret said, "Hey, get my name right," and he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, there's a lot of blondes in this operation. I can't keep you all straight. Megyn Kelly's coming up," starts throwing all these blonde names. And then at the end of the segment says, "Thank you for your blondness," to both of us. So I went to his executive producer and I said, he needs to apologize and he needs to never do that again.
Stop.
Or I'm not.
Stop. Really?
Is that sexual discrimination?
Really? Is that something, really? Is that who we are? Is that who we are? If the role was reversed, and she would have said, you know, we got a lot of old white anchors here, and I can't keep all you guys straight. Am I going to say something? Am I, as an employer, going to say anything other than he's sensitive about that? You shouldn't do that around him if you want to get along. But it's not a problem. Do we have such thin skin that you can't make a blonde joke or an old joke or any joke?
Especially when it's on air.
And you're on air, and all he's trying to do is be funny to get out of an awkward situation to where I didn't remember your name.
Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly, I would guess many anchors have made jokes about, I don't know, maybe the Donald Trump's hair. Has there been jokes about Donald Trump's hair made?
I mean, this is craziness.
Sure.
Okay, so go on. Now listen to the rest.
Doing his show anymore. And I was told basically, well, you know, Bill, there's nothing we can do about it. He's a throwback. He's kind of an Archie Bunker. And I said, well, if you mean he's a Neanderthal, then we're on the same page. He can never do that again. I'm a political analyst here.
Stop. Stop. Really? You're a Neanderthal for making a blonde joke? Now, I know some people may not like blonde jokes. I know my wife is blonde, and she was, you know, she was always told, hey, you're pretty. Don't worry about stuff. You don't have to worry about being smart. I get it. That's not what Bill O'Reilly was doing. Please. Okay, continue on.
Went to Bill, came back, said, no, he's not going to apologize. So then I went to I was called into my boss's office. I was told, what can we do? It's Bill. There's nothing we can do. You know, we're sorry this happened to you, but there's nothing we can do. I complained to Roger Ailes. I was told the same exact thing.
Okay, stop. So now she has gone up the food chain. She's gone to Bill's boss. She's gone to her boss. Now she takes it all the way to the chairman of the board. A blonde joke.
For thanks for your blondness.
Now listen to this. Wow.
It's Bill. He's a jerk. Nobody likes him. And then Roger said, you know, Bill, he likes to put up dirty pictures and ask pretty girls to talk about them.
Stop. Now, gee, where's the sexual harassment happening here?
It's not thanks for your blondness on air. That's not sexual harassment, is it?
Mm-mm.
Sexual harassment.
And where is
here
Bill's reputation? Is Bill's reputation being smeared here now?
By Roger Ailes.
By Roger Ailes. Now, I'm going to tell you a story that I've not told before about what it's like to work at Fox News. But let me start with this. I may be wrong, but I don't think I am. And this is something that all of us have soul searched on because we all like Bill. We worked side by side with Bill. I toured with Bill. If we're going to ever see a guy be lewd and crude, you're going to see it while they're on the road. And we went on the road. And believe me, we have seen lewd and crude behavior from people on the road who are traveling with us. Bill O'Reilly was buttoned up. And he not only had opportunity with some of the women that, you know, were touring with us, I think you also have motive. Never, never once. In fact, we all believe the opposite. Now, that doesn't make our experience accurate. It just makes it our experience. So I'm not dismissing if somebody out there is like, no, this happened to me. Great. I don't know about it. And that's what should have been what was discussed if it was real on CNN, not a blonde joke. Now, I'm going to take a quick break and I'm going to come back and I'm going to tell you first what I believe is true about Bill O'Reilly and this stuff, and then why this is happening. And that is evidence to me of what happened to Bill O'Reilly. And it's not just wrong. If I'm right on this, it's dangerous.
We have won. The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
All right, so we're talking about this audio about Kirsten Powers, who was complaining that Bill O'Reilly pointed out the fact that there are a lot of blondes that work at Fox News, and that was her experience with Bill O'Reilly, the nightmare, that he was a Neanderthal and said, "Here's so many blondes here, I sometimes lose track and I can't keep you all straight." She wanted something done, he needed to apologize, needed to make sure that that never happened again, blah, blah, blah. This woman is, she's a liberal. She dated Anthony Weiner. How you could have spent 2 minutes with Anthony Weiner if your line is that is mm-hmm. beyond me. But so the trouble comes as she is telling the story. She said, so I went to Roger Ailes. And what did Roger Ailes say, Stu? Nobody likes Bill.
No, nobody likes Bill. He likes to put up pinup, pictures of hot women. He likes to talk dirty to hot women.
Hey, where does that come from? Where does the talk dirty come from?
I mean, it's coming from Roger Ailes here.
Here, but what is that? What is that?
An old story that had been reported.
Okay, now this is the big thing. This is the one that everybody says, well, he paid off. Okay, here he is, and it seems as though this was a consensual relationship, at least at one point. Bill thought that they were, this is what it seems. I don't know if this is true.
But you have not talked to Bill about this.
We have not talked to Bill.
You're just saying, basing this on the reporting.
Basing this on the reporting, I have not talked to Bill. And it's like, hey, Bill, so tell me about that lawsuit. No. But this is my theory on Bill. Consensual, and at some point it stopped. He didn't know, or he was just like, I'm just kidding, whatever. But she taped really inappropriate things on the phone. At some point, she knew, I can make a killing here, okay? And so she demanded, I think the word was $60 million to keep those tapes out of the public. Do you want your tapes or your emails to your wife or your husband? Do you want bedroom talk of yours out into the public? Because I wouldn't. Would you, Stu? Would you?
Well, especially to my husband. I would say no to that.
Yeah. To your wife or husband, okay? Oh. Nobody wants that. Okay? That's not something that Bill O'Reilly or anybody wants. Well, I have it. Okay. Settle a lawsuit. Now, I think that I could be wrong. But the way I've read that story, and I've looked at it, for what, 15 years that story came out? 15 years ago?
10, 15.
And so I haven't thought about that story since then. But if you hear what she's saying here, what did Roger Ailes do? Roger Ailes brought that story up. And her sexual smear, the reason why this is on CNN with the headline, look at what she said, Roger Ailes said about Bill, comes from that one story. Now, why is that important? Let me share a story with you on what I know about working at Fox under Roger Ailes. Roger Ailes was a genius, sheer genius. I think there was a good side of Roger Ailes. I think the dark side of Roger Ailes won. But I think there was a really good side of Roger Ailes. And I think he was torn apart at the end, towards the end of his life, thinking what he could have done if he would have used his power for good as opposed to evil. But at some point in his life, he became a dirty old man. And one of the things that he did at Fox, and I know it firsthand, is he would sabotage relationships. Remember how I have said in the past that, you know, Sean Hannity and Mark Levin and I, we didn't get along? Well, me personally, I believe that all came from Roger Ailes. And I know another one who is involved, who was also feeding that stuff, but they were being fed by Roger Ailes. Roger liked to be the kingpin, and he was the master manipulator of everybody's relationship. And he liked his shows and his talent not liking each other, because he knew if I keep them pitted against each other, A, they'll compete harder to beat that son of a bitch, and they would never join forces. If they join forces, then we're in trouble. I know this firsthand because Bill O'Reilly heard an argument in the hallway at Fox. I don't know if I've told this story before on the air. Have I?
I think so.
Heard a story, heard an argument on in the hallway about Acorn. And remember when we found that New Orleans was the head, there was some really bad and it had to do with Van Jones and Acorn and SEIU. Well, I didn't have the money to go investigate that, but Bill O'Reilly's team did. Bill O'Reilly saw that story and was like, got to get on that. That's great. Bill and I had no relationship. Bill heard an argument in the hallway between my producer and his producer. And my producer at the time was yelling at Bill's producer saying, you stole our story. And that's when I came around the corner. And I said, whoa, 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 guys, what is up? And he said, well, you know, Bill O'Reilly's people are stealing our story. And I said, what story is that? The Acorn story. And I said, that's not our story. That's America's story. What are they doing? And he said, well, they're going to send somebody down into New Orleans. And I looked at Bill's producer and I said, that's fantastic. We'll get you everything that we know. Can we have you after you break the news with Bill? Can we have you on the show and you further the show? He was stunned. Yeah. Good. And then I looked at Grish and I said, whatever they need, get them. We're a team here. That's when Bill walked around the corner and he just looked at me and went, Beck. Bill was standing around the corner. He was listening to all of it. That was the first time that Bill knew, I'm not cut from the rest of, I'm not like that. I'm a team player. Let's work together for the good of the company. Let's work together for the good of the country. We're allies. If you remember on my show, I used to promote Sean Hannity and he would do specials and I would promote him because I wanted him to know I'm in your corner. You don't have to be in my corner. I'm in your corner. And I would promote. I did that to every show because I wanted to show. Nobody ever asked me to. I had to go track down the details, but I did it to show the other talent we don't have to be enemies. Why do we have to be enemies? So when that happened, Bill called me up to his office the next day. Beck, you stopped by my office. I want to talk to you. Okay. So I go into Bill's office, which was the corner office, and pretty darn sweet. And I'm sitting there and, you know, he's got all these pictures of, you know, him with, you know, the Pope and the President and Jesus. And I mean, he's got everybody. And you're like, wow. And it was a pretty powerful office. And I'm sitting there like a little know-nothing. And he said, oh, is that the music? I'm going to have to pause in this story so we can pay some light bills. And we'll come back and tell you the rest. And I think it will begin to make sense why I've said we're on a dangerous road in the media and a very dangerous road.
program.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck program.
So, I'm sitting in Bill O'Reilly's office. And Bill calls me in and he said, "So what are you doing here?" And I'm like, "Well, you called me to come up to your office." He said, "No, I mean, why are you here at Fox?" He said, "I used to watch you on Headline News." And he said, "I'd watch you." And he said, "For a while there, I just thought you were nuts." And he said, "You might be. I'm not saying you're not. You might be nuts." He said, "But you're hell of a television performer." And I said, "Thank you." And he said, "You really believe this stuff, don't you?" And I said, "Yes, I do." He said, "You need to slow down." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "You're just going to burn through way too much." And I said, "Bill, I don't plan on being here very long." And he said, "Why?" And I said, "I don't want to do this. I figure I'll be here for about 2 years and that'll be enough." And he said, "You could be here the rest of your, look at me. You could be here the rest of your life." And I said, "I don't want to be." And he really didn't understand that. And he was like, "Why not?" And I said, "Because I don't, this isn't what I want to do. This is what I feel like I need to do." So the Bill O'Reilly in the hallway that heard me say, basically, "We're partners. We don't even have to be friends, but we don't have to be enemies. We're partners on furthering the news." That coupled with him sitting me down and saying, "Why are you here?" And I said, "Because I believe it." He said, "You're going to need help." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "You say some pretty crazy things." He said, "And people are going to need to hear the answer on what you really meant." And he said, "You know you're not going to get a fair interview anywhere." And I said, "Oh, I know. I was just spent some time with Katie Couric." And he said, "I promise you, I will give you a fair interview. I'm not going to be a shill, but I'll give you a fair interview. I'm going to ask you the question everybody wants to hear, but I'll let you answer it." And I said, "That would be tremendous." And if you're a longtime listener, you know, people used to call me all the time and say, "Glenn, why do you go on Bill O'Reilly? He's not helping you. He's not your friend." Yes, he was. He was my friend. He was asking the question the Katie Couric's of the world wanted to ask me without the agenda. He was a great friend. He was, fact, he and Anderson Cooper are the only two people in the industry that treated me like an equal, like a human being, and like I was intelligent. Only two people on the air that I can think of that actually have been there and really understand it and may not agree with me on everything, but they know that I'm trying to be a decent human being. I left Bill's office. When I left Bill's office, that didn't take long to get back up to the second floor to where Roger Ailes was. A few weeks later, I was in Ailes' office. He called me in for something. And he said, "Hey, listen, I know you're new here. I just want you to know you got to be careful of Bill O'Reilly." And I said, "Okay, he's a user of people. And you just got to stay away from him. Be very, very careful." "Huh, okay." I didn't say anything. "Okay, file it away." A couple weeks later, I get another interview or time with Roger Ailes. And he plants another negative seed about Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly and I are talking. And I said, "Hey, Bill, I think I've figured something out about this place." He said, "Yes." And I said, "I bet you're hearing negative things about me, about things I might be saying about you behind your back." And he just smiled, "Might be." And I said, yeah, I'm hearing things that I shouldn't trust you because you're saying things behind my back. He smiled and said, might be. And I said, I tell you what, why don't we make a deal that we don't listen to those voices? And if we think that it might be true, we come to each other and we ask the other and we're honest with each other. Other than that, we dismiss them. He said, I think that's very wise advice. Now, here's why I tell this story. Did you see what just happened with Kirsten Powers? She goes into Roger Ailes' office. She's new there. She goes to Roger's office, and she has a problem because he called her blonde on the air. And that's something that she even wrote a book about, you know, what? Blondes? A non-blonde joke book? I mean, it was a book about how it's bad in the horrible things that happen to blonde women.
Well, I mean, a very standard criticism by the left was that there are a bunch of blondes working at Fox News, the Fox News babes, they've been called. That was something very common that the left was upset about.
Yeah, but she's on the left.
She was on the left, but worked at Fox News. Mm-hmm. So defended Fox News against that accusation and has written about how she did not like that people noticed the blonde hair.
Right. Then you probably should have your hair. You should stop lightening your hair so it's so blonde. But
I don't know what her natural color hair is, honestly.
Yeah, I would say probably 40% of the people that are on air at Fox are not naturally blonde. But that's, you know, a different story. I'm, believe it or not, not a natural blonde anymore. So
really?
Yes.
Wow.
So anyway, you see what happened. She goes up and talks to Daddy Ailes. And what's Daddy say? A friend of Bill. A friend. Mm-hmm. You got to be careful. You know, Bill likes to talk dirty to people. My guess is that Bill has made mistakes, but Bill mainly is old school, as he says. He's not going to play the politically correct, I have to apologize because you were hurt by a blonde. Get over it. You're in the big leagues. Get over it. I think that's old school Bill O'Reilly. I also know Bill. We never had a problem because Bill knows that we're not only doing news, but we're also doing a show. And so he takes his business seriously, more seriously than anybody I've ever seen. And he has very high standards. Don't screw it up. Don't screw my show up. Don't waste my time. Don't waste my audience's time. Okay? Very high standards. In the 90s, in the 80s, this is the way I was, except I was much more of an animal. And if you screwed something up, I was pissed at you.
Not that you're not saying the sexual part of it.
I'm saying the demanding exactness in your job. So Bill gets a bad rap because, look, if you're not good at what you do or you screw up or you're lazy, screw up once, he's going to be mad at you. Screw up twice, you've made an enemy. Not on his show, not on his watch. Don't screw it up, okay? That's one reason why Bill and I never had a problem, because I understood that about Bill. He takes it very seriously. Those who don't, you got trouble. So he has that going for him. He is old school, not going to play political correctness. He made a mistake, I think, in a consensual relationship. And the worst part of it was Roger Ailes was feeding poison to everybody. So how much of this was right about Bill O'Reilly, and how much of this is poison that everybody knows that? Because, I mean, even Roger Ailes, who we know is a predator, Roger Ailes says he's a predator, right? I mean, he's got to be a predator.
Nobody likes him.
Nobody likes him. That was one of the first things. Glenn, there's a reason nobody likes Bill O'Reilly. Really? Because I didn't take everybody else's word for it. I just got to know him. And it started with me knowing that he's got to be the most guarded man in the world, because either everybody wants something from him or everybody is knifing him in the back for his position. So I showed him support, and that broke down a wall. And so I found out who he really was, or at least the really was who he showed me. How many people just took, oh yeah, well, he's watch out, watch out.
You know, and it's tough because, you know, you get to these situations and there's nobody who will even say, you know, things that are positive, whether they're judging the case or not. They, you know, even if they like you, they don't defend you. You're not the only one, apparently, though, defending Bill O'Reilly. In a world exploding in violence, we've now identified an evil closer to home, Bill O'Reilly. Sexism is a serious problem and a serious accusation. It's true there are many people who dismiss a woman as unserious and out of their depth, not because they are, but because they are a woman. Bill O'Reilly isn't one of them. If disagreement is violence and everything is sexist, then eventually nothing will be.
Who said strong. That?
The headline is Kirsten Powers, Bill O'Reilly is not sexist.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. When did she say that?
Written in 2014.
Oh my gosh.
Written in 2014 for USA Today.
And she was the one that CNN is using now as the big smoking gun.
She must have forgotten when Bill thanked her for her blood.
Unbelievable.
Jeez.
I mean, I will tell you. That's incredible. Literally the headline in USA Today, Kirsten Powers, Bill O'Reilly is not sexist. That is the headline of the story. It's a column.
I mean, it was shocking that she survived the initial attack about her being blonde.
Mm-hmm.
I you know, that she could even speak after that is a tribute to her. And then for her to completely forget about it in 2014, an extraordinary person.
We all have days where we forget things.
Unbelievable.
I mean, and she goes into it because at the time,
is there anybody else that is defending? I saw Eric Metaxas say something nice. Is there anybody saying anything nice about Bill O'Reilly?
Other than Kirsten Powers in 2014.
Yeah, other than when it was popular to say something nice about Bill O'Reilly. Look, I'm not judging the section. I don't know any of that.
Right. Yeah,
so I don't know. But I think you need to take people seriously on that stuff. And I don't like if he's treating people, you know, poorly, you know, on the staff. I don't like that. Shut up, Jeffy.
Really?
I don't know. I don't like it.
Huh.
I think it's when you're rude to people, it's wrong. Shut the fat mouth and close
those. That's a surprise to me. I didn't realize you'd feel that way.
Close those lard-ridden eyes.
Is that a new policy coming
from
Glenn
Beck? Yes, it is. But I don't... You don't stand for that. It's not right.
No.
It's not right. And in a world where there are contracts and stars, it sometimes lasts longer than it should. But also, let's look at facts.
Have we seen a single fact? Have we seen any proof? Have we seen evidence of any of it? I don't think so.
And the reason why
his word against his.
And nobody wants to stand up because it's unpopular. And I will be painted as a guy who's dismissing sexual assault or sexual impropriety or any of that. I know that's how it's going to be painted, but that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there is real and there is fake. I don't know which this is, but I haven't seen the real stuff. I'm only seeing things that make me say, well, he called her blonde, and then Roger Ailes said something about him. That's not the same as sexual harassment. What are we doing? Right is right, no matter what it costs you personally. Right is right.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Wow. Do you hear the hatred happening here? Pat is... Go ahead. Say what you said just a minute ago about bronies.
These are like teenagers and young adult males... Who are into My Little Pony?
Yes.
They need to be banished from society. I think there should be like an island of bronies.
Do you remember the boy? Do you remember the boy we had?
Yes.
And we brought him in.
We got the entire collection.
We got him a backpack with a My Little Pony, his favorite My Little Pony.
I don't remember that at all.
You don't remember that at all?
Because
it was the exact opposite of what you were saying right now.
Kirsten Powers, is that you?
Yeah.
How old was he?
Like I don't remember.
Four?
No.
At four, it's okay.
12?
Yeah,
13,
yeah,
something like that.
Are you telling me self-respecting young men?
You were on the show!
I don't remember that.
Wow.
I don't remember
Kirsten Powers, it is you.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. A lot going on. Tillerson is now ramping up the fight with Iran and the Iran nuclear deal, which was a horrible deal to begin with. Pat is still beside himself about bronies, men who like My Little Pony. He does make a point worth hearing. There's new report on the border wall that it's going to kill birds like nobody's business. And I think we have to start there. And your phone call, 888-727-BECK. We have a lot to get to. Let's start right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay. If you were for a border fence or border wall, you're for stronger immigration laws, or at least enforcing, not for stronger. You just want to enforce the laws that we have.
Hateful.
You're going to probably change your mind, and this is going to be that moment. I always say, what was the pivot point? This will be the moment where you will say, this was my pivot point. I had never thought of this when we were talking about the border wall. Mm-hmm. Listen to this.
Well, Craig, if this border wall happens, it will be an unprecedented environmental catastrophe. Mm.
This is Jeff Corwin, by the way. Jeff Corwin, who's he's an animal expert. We all know that. Remember from, was it Animal Planet? He did all those shows, and now he's on an ABC special.
Now, this is it. Now, I want you to know. This is going to be an unprecedented environmental tragedy and disaster.
It's poised to cut through more than 1,200 miles of habitat along the border between United States and Mexico. There are over 90 threatened and critically endangered species that are in the crosshairs because of wall. And we've got over 100 migratory birds that will be impacted from this wall.
Now, let's listen.
The
endangered
Mexican gray wolf, only 133 individuals left of this iconic carnivore, this amazing canine. Its head is on the chopping block and likely could fall prey to extinction. The expanse of the jaguar just now being restored into its habitat in Arizona will likely be extirpated, pushed back towards the precipice of extinction because of this disastrous wall.
Hang on just a second. Animals don't have passports. There are no borders for animals. Okay? They don't have pockets.
Yeah.
So we can't require them now to have passports. They do not have pockets. Except for the kangaroo, but that's a different continent. So if we were talking about kangaroos, we could get them pockets. We could give them passports because they have pockets. Mm-hmm. Other than that, they don't have pockets.
Right.
They don't have hands either, so they couldn't really step up to the little thing. And they can't talk. It's complicated with animals. Borders are complicated with animals. Now, the one I'm worried about, because we are talking about an environmental disaster, I'm worried about the birds. Now, listen.
The risk of sounding ignorant or foolish...
the birds specifically, wouldn't they just be able to fly over the wall?
He's almost afraid. It's such an obvious question. He's afraid to ask
it. Yeah. I don't want to sound ignorant to anyone, but I'm gonna dial in some common sense. All right? I'm just gonna say it. Birds.
They fly.
They can fly left and right, but I think they can fly up and down as well.
Not 30 feet off the ground.
No, and by the way, the wall will not wind up being 30 feet, would be my guess here. It'll be 10 tops. But
well, it's interesting you should say that. And
It is an excellent question.
And certainly many animals that fly can migrate over that wall.
Right.
So, yes, they will just fly over the wall.
Yes.
So it's a good question
because it's an obvious question.
I didn't think you'd ask it because you're on MSNBC.
Right.
Who knew?
I mean, that's not a question that you should have asked. But it's
this
a good question.
This sounds like Fox News propaganda to me.
Right.
Birds can fly.
But many animals actually stay very low.
Many of these animals,
for example, birds and bats, are actually passing close to the ground surface because they're heading towards plants.
I think if they're that stupid, they probably deserve to run into the wall.
Darwin, if you're a bat and your sonar, radar, whatever it is that makes you fly around without eyes, is so bad that you can't find and see a 1,700-mile fence, natural selection should kick in for that bat.
It seems like trees would be killing them, too, right?
Trees, they're flying low because they're going for the plants. A rock?
Private fences around homes.
A home. And
a parked car.
Can I tell you something?
Are we saying
that the wall will be built out of glass and we're going to use Windex on it so they won't be able to see that it's a wall? Maybe that's what it is. Let me tell you something.
I think you're all dismissing the pictures that we've all seen of the Great Wall of China and all of
the dead birds underneath it.
And the bats on both sides of that wall. Just giant piles.
Piles of bats.
And after a while, the wall doesn't matter because the dead bats they become ramps. And you just walk on the bodies of the dead bats.
A bat ramp.
You're mocking. Were you mocking?
No, I said it was a bat ramp. A bamp. If you want to maybe call
but
it that.
But that was not mocking.
No. It's very, very...
Because we should use that.
It's an important part of our security.
Right. Uh-huh. We should... You know what? I'm going to give that free to the scientific community.
Oh, wow.
Vamps. Well, it's yours, but I...
Bamp.
What? Or a bamp?
Bamp.
Bat ramp. You can use that in all your scientific literature on why this is going to be such a hassle.
Devastating disaster
for the birds that can't fly.
They're on the chopping block. The wolves are on a chopping block. Are they actually going to put wolves' heads on chopping blocks and cut their heads off?
The imagery is so great.
I'm sorry, we can't build this wall until I cut your head off.
I mean, if there are 150 of them, what do you say we make sure that it's not all the male wolves on one side and female wolves on the other?
Or, you know, I mean, there is an argument against free-range wolves. I don't know if anyone knows this.
No. These are beautiful animals.
Oh, okay.
They're carnivores. They're beautiful carnivores.
Oh, that sounds
terrible,
actually.
Have you ever seen a wolf?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In real life?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They are terrifying. Yeah. I mean, it's like Little Red Riding Hood. It was a wolf that ate her and the grandma.
That's right.
I mean, hello. Yeah.
And then jaguars. Do we really want jaguars roaming free on the border?
I'd like him to stay on the Mexican side.
Yes.
I mean, that's cool. Yeah. I have a problem with that.
It's one of the benefits of the wall. I think we put all the dangerous animals on the other side of it.
That side. You can have the jaguars. I love that about you and Mexico, and I'll go visit and see those jaguars. You let them mate on your side of the wall.
But even so, I'm kind of confused as to why they can't just move out of the way of the wall being built and then go about their business.
Well, the imagery there is amazing.
These animals are in the crosshairs.
Crosshairs, yes.
They're on the chopping block. What? None of these things are real. You're just
saying. What are you talking about?
What? They wouldn't move 100 yards? Like, why? I mean, I understand that that isn't, it could be theoretic. Oh, okay. Like if you were putting it,
there's actually a river between the two countries too, now that they navigate all right.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Right? Okay.
Thanks to the bridge.
Do we need to look? Do I need to bring up North and South Korea where all of the DMZ, where all of the little wolf family members are living in freedom and the North Korean wolves are living in slavery and they're not able to see each other anymore and they don't know if they're alive or dead? Imagine you're a wolf and you don't know if you're alive or dead. If you're if your relative who you love is on the other side of the wall with a concussion or worse because it didn't see the wall and ran right into it trying to come home to you. It's wrong. It was wrong with the Berlin Wall. It's wrong with the Great Wall of China. It's wrong for birds. It's wrong, it's wrong for bats. It is wrong for panthers, jaguars, BMWs.
Mexican timber wolves.
All of them.
Whatever.
Yeah. All of them.
Separating wolf families.
Bad.
It's,
you go ahead. You break up the families. Could we go to Victoria in New York? Yes, Victoria, you're on more on bird talk. You're on bird talk. Go ahead. Hello, Victoria. Line one. That's Mary. Hang on. Put Mary on hold and let's go to Victoria. Line one, please. There we go. Victoria, hi.
Yes, hi. I just love this show.
Thank you.
I wanted to make a comparison here. They're so concerned about the wall. But meanwhile, what about those windmills that are out there killing birds that are supposed to be great for the environment?
Right. Where's Jeff Corwin on those?
Bill O'Reilly on your program. Can you put Bill O'Reilly on your station? Give him a show on your station?
Can I put Bill O'Reilly? Well, that would be up to Bill O'Reilly.
So suggest it.
Yeah, I don't know if Bill O'Reilly. I mean, Bill O'Reilly's worth a fortune, I don't know if Bill. I don't see Bill as the type that's walking around, you know, on the beach with a metal detector. But I don't know if Bill wants to, you know, what Bill wants to do.
I wonder if Bill would be willing to relocate to Dallas.
Did you hear? You wouldn't need to relocate to Dallas.
But if he did, you know, he could just come in here and sit down and we could put a microphone in front of him so he felt at home, you know, and position some cameras that point his way. And we could say, hey, Bill, if you miss it, just pretend to do the factor tonight. Every night at about the same time.
We could do that?
Trick him into this.
I think we could trick him into it.
Well, if birds are dumb enough to not fly over a wall, maybe Bill is dumb enough to do that.
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think so. Thanks so much for your phone call. Mary in Pennsylvania. Hello, Mary. You're on the Glenn Beck program. Mary, are you there? All right. Let me go to TJ in North Carolina.
Hey, how you doing? I was wondering, what do you think Bill O'Reilly's next career move is? I know he's, you know, he's old enough to retire, but I mean, I would like to see him on another show. Maybe get a another cable outlet.
Maybe like relocate to Dallas and sit at a desk with a microphone in front of him.
Well,
yeah. And then position two cameras that would be pointed his way. I just
all right,
kind of brainstorming top of my head here.
All right, okay. Well, I honestly don't know.
I don't think that Bill's even thought
of it yet.
Bill and I
responded to Bill yesterday around this time. He was getting on a plane to go from Rome back, and he was still saying, you know, we're still trying to work things out. So, I mean, I haven't, you know.
Kind of interesting because we're not the only ones that have thought of this. They were discussing it on CNN. Was it early this morning? I think it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. They had a guest, Joe Concha, on talking about it.
Moving forward, what happens with Bill O'Reilly? I got my money on Glenn Beck. The Blaze.
Nice.
They're good friends. They exchanged some emails just yesterday as O'Reilly was coming back from Italy.
Did I say that yesterday?
They have an opening. They might have an opening. Tommy Lahren no longer at the network. And trust me, Bill O'Reilly, 4 million viewers a night. That would be a huge get for Beck. Can he afford him? I'm willing to bet Bill O'Reilly is worth $85 million.
And is that enough for Bill O'Reilly? I mean, you know, think about his ratings.
Right. Well, they have a pretty good platform. It's not CNN. It's not Fox News. But he's not getting signed by CNN or MSNBC or ABC or CBS. He's going to have to go to a network like The Blaze, and he could help put them on the map. But for him, it's about being a culture warrior. That's what he's always called himself. He'll be willing to take a pay cut if he goes there because he doesn't know anything else to do. I don't know if Newsmax has the distribution or can afford him, okay. Or he has the relationship there with Chris Ruddy, who runs that place.
Right. Yeah.
I think that with Beck, he does have that relationship.
Interesting.
So if he's there a year from now, then we'll play back the tape.
I wonder if Bill is interested in a 99.7% pay cut.
Seriously, I'll pay him in sandwiches.
We cannot offer him, by the way, that was not legally binding. We cannot offer him 0.3% of his salary.
that is not something we can.
Can Beck afford it? No. Beck cannot afford the Bill. Nope. I don't know. What do you think he is going to do?
I don't know. I mean, I
how would you? Could I have this conversation on the air
and have a nice take a maybe a couple minutes to think about that and not rush into something?
For him is they're talking about it like a $40 million settlement or
oh yeah, no, he
more.
Doesn't need the money.
I mean, he's going to be okay,
but he is motivated by money. I mean, he believes, you know, as I do, your work is worth something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
of course.
I just don't know. I don't know anyone who has that kind of money.
Yeah,
it's going to pay him. How would you feel about Bill O'Reilly here?
I feel great about it. As long as, you know, he doesn't hit on me.
I don't think you say that's... I don't think
that's going to happen.
That's not going to happen, I don't think.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, then I feel pretty good about it.
I'll tell you one thing, Glenn. If he says something about my blondness,
you're going to go nuts.
After you've written a story
you're
about how
he's not
as strong
as Kirsten Powers. I don't think
you're
survive
not gonna, it. He's not going to say anything about your blondness. You're a blonde. You're fat.
You know...
You know
what?
You
know, first of all, that's a good comeback. No, how long did you work on that one, Jeff? You know, man, he gets me every time.
He does.
Yeah,
this is why he wins all these battles.
You know, Jeffy, how much of a lawsuit you could have?
Oh, geez, don't put that in his head.
No, please.
Don't put that in his
it's
head.
It's too fat. It doesn't. It's not penetrating all the way to the brain, not to the logic center of his head. It doesn't. Anyway,
I've always been so respectful of Jeffy.
And, oh, have you?
And with the great work he does here at the
Jeffy,
Blaze.
Let me tell you
that's
something.
That's not going to change the lawsuits, too. I'll tell you that.
Let me tell you something, Jeffy. It's been them the whole time. They forced me to do it.
Oh, because, you know, we own the company, and we would therefore force Glenn around and make him do things. That's an interesting proposal there.
I would never just sue you anyway, Glenn.
That is so sweet.
We'd be friends, all of us together again. Oh, whatever happened to that team? Well, last I saw, they were all in court against each other. It was nice. At least they went out together.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Holy cow! We're just getting a look at the settlement for Bill O'Reilly, and they're saying now it's how much?
They're not saying
$40 million was the report I read, but I bet it's going to be more than that.
We're saying a staggering amount.
He'll probably wind up getting more than Ailes got to leave.
Ailes got $40 million to leave, according to CNN. He just bought a $36 million house in Florida.
Ailes?
Ailes, yeah. Now O'Reilly is paid.
Didn't he have a really nice house in New York?
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, can't be expected to have one.
Right across the water
from West Point.
Oh, it was freaking believable.
It had been reported that O'Reilly was making $20 million a year.
No.
They are now saying new reports that it was $25 million a year. He will not get maybe all of the money he's owed because he just signed a new contract, but he's going to get a lot of it.
Good portion of it, though.
Tens of millions.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Bill, I think you might be a relative of mine. can I borrow some money? Holy cow, why would you ever go to work? Seriously, you're 65, 67 years old.
Yeah.
Walking away with $50 million. Call it a day.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
This doesn't sound bad. Facebook wants to get inside your brain so you can type telepathically. Yeah, I don't think that sounds bad at all. I can't imagine what could go wrong with, you know, Facebook being able to read our minds, right? Am I right?
You're right.
And just being paranoid on anything like that.
It would just save carpal tunnel syndrome.
We could just save one.
Just one person from having carpal tunnel syndrome, then we should all be forced to do it.
We should all be forced to have Facebook tap into our brains telepathically.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good
stuff. I can't even imagine the stuff that would be spilling out into Jeffy's computer.
By the way, I think I'll open up the phones here. We have David Limbaugh on. But if you want to talk about the Bill O'Reilly thing, because I don't think anybody else probably in talk radio, at least the big national shows, are probably going to do much time talking about him. Maybe I'm wrong. 888-727-BECK, because we've had a lot of calls this morning off the air. People are pretty devastated by him leaving. And it's kind of weird because he's not a movement conservative. You know what I mean? Bill's always frustrating to me because he's not a guy who's like, yeah, we're going this way in the country. He's not that guy. He's a moderate. I know for some reason the left likes to say that he's just a monster, but
an extremist. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Couldn't be further from the truth.
Not at all.
Helen, North Carolina.
Yes, I'm calling in with an idea that could take care of this whole problem. I think women in the workplace who think they're all that should have to wear body cams. We can't take their word for what was said, he, she, and all that. We just don't buy it. Women know women. I have watched things like this happen in a job I had in a town in North Carolina where the women would make the men get involved with them and then complain when they did.
Right.
Oh,
and
wow.
When there was,
well, I don't know. I don't.
Jeffy.
Don't encourage. All right, Helen, thank you very much. I think
you'd never win a lawsuit. That's really where we're getting to, though, is everybody has to wear a body cam.
It does bode well to, you know, because you have to, we're supposed to believe everything that everyone says, right?
You have the right to be believed, right?
You have a right to be heard.
No, that's not what Hillary
says. But you also have a right to face your accuser.
Right.
And you have the right to be taken seriously is really the way that should be phrased.
Right.
And look, obviously we're not going to, I wouldn't put it past this society that everyone's wearing body cams in a few years. I don't think that's a good solution.
Can I tell you something? Already, we talked about this, already they have developed contact lenses that are telescopic, and you won't have to wear glasses. They're not only telescopic, so I can improve my vision, but it also records everything that I look at. So I can't remember what it is, but if you blink twice or something, it starts recording. So you're not going to need a body cam.
If that's
where we are now, imagine 5 years. We're just all going to be uploaded and give me your memory. Yeah, it didn't happen that way. Yes, it did.
I mean, and we are so far down that road already. I mean, we played a video the other day on Pat and Stu in which a man in the middle of nowhere in Canada was walking up to a store and was run over by a deer.
Yes, I saw that.
And he said he was run over by a deer and no one believed him. Until they saw the photographic evidence of him being run over by a speeding deer.
Right.
We used to play...
Grandma got run over by a reindeer.
Right, exactly happened. We played...
Russian dash cam videos. Right, yeah.
No, Russian dash cams. Russian dash cam videos. The Russians were the first to do this. And it was exactly because of the reason the caller just said. People were faking getting hit by cars. They would run up to the front of the car and jump on the hood and go, oh, and fall off.
And then take the insurance money.
They would take the insurance money or pressure the person to pay them off right on the scene. So people started installing the dash cams. And now there's tons of hilarious videos of people walking up to stopped cars.
That's why the Russians have the dash cam.
And now they're everywhere in China.
Litigation.
And they're coming here. They're here in large amounts. I mean, there's big companies now investing a lot in this so that you can see everything in front of you so that when something happens that's not your fault, you can prove that it was not your fault.
And do they run all the time or do you have to turn them on? Or they turn on automatically when
I think they run all the time but then delete themselves as they go if you have nothing. So you have to, if you know, you get like a half an hour of footage or an hour of footage, and then it would take the oldest footage and erase it. But bottom line is, like, you know, cameras, I mean, nanny cams, you know, they are everywhere. Not to mention, everyone has a phone. I mean, look at the United thing. If you read a story about, hey, there was a person taken off forcibly by a police officer because he would not exit the plane, and he wound up with a bloody lip.
You would give United Airlines all the latitude in the world.
Yeah, you'd say, wait a minute, he wouldn't get off the plane. I mean, I know that's annoying, but you got to get off the plane.
And you also would have said, if they dragged him off, they had good reason to drag him off. Yeah.
Even if you might say, look, that doesn't seem right, but we don't know exactly what happened. The thing that made that into a big story, and the reason why the CEO is constantly apologizing right now, is because A, he screamed like a baby, and B, the woman across the aisle was saying, oh my God, why are you doing that to him?
Yeah.
Now look, that was a real thing, and obviously United handled it poorly.
Right.
And the police, honestly, also handled that poorly, and there's also mistakes attached to it. However, generally speaking, if you go back and look at that, without the camera, that's not much of an incident.
But
Ray Rice has never played another game in the NFL. And you know what? I have no problem with someone who hits their wife in an elevator of a casino never playing another game. But he was suspended for, what, 2 games? Until that video came out. Yeah. Now he's never stepped foot on the field again.
I'm actually glad.
I'm glad, too. I'm not saying these are bad things. I think a lot of times they're good things. How many cops have been exonerated from things they've been accused of because there's been video? I argue all the time that it would be that the number one person who should want body cams on police officers are police officers.
Yep.
Because we all in our heads imagine, well, why did that police take off this unarmed man? This unarmed man. Well, if the guy's reaching for his pockets,
and that's why
you can understand that. That's why they have them. And it's to show the truth of those incidents. And a lot of times it's really good. But we are in that world already. We're already there.
But here's the problem. You guys see the story today? Probably not. I think it's in France, actually. Story from France on the 17 fake news reports that have happened in the election. And some of them are photographs. One of them is the big socialist, and he is, you know, he's for the people, and he's an average everyday guy, blah, blah, blah. And he's standing in a crowd, and he's just standing with his arms folded like this, and you see his watch. And somebody has digitally put a very expensive, $26,000 Rolex on his arm. And it's not an obvious Rolex, it's not the big gold bling. And so it looks understated unless you know what that watch is. And it was actually done by somebody, I think, on his side as a joke. But then the other side took it and ran with it. And now people believe that it's real. And so he looks like a total hypocrite. And on every single candidate, there is something like that, where they've doctored a picture, took an old picture, changed the picture. I mean, you can't believe even pictures now, though.
Yeah, there's no currency left in the truth anymore.
There's none.
There's no value. And that's why it's hard to do. I mean, you see this more and more. There's a lot of people who want that to be the case. I mean, we've seen that from, commentators that have said, we're in the post-fact era and it's wonderful.
This comes from...
That's not a world I want to live in.
This comes from, really, the last generation tolerating character doesn't matter. By tolerating character doesn't matter, we moved down the line to, well, what else can I lie about? Now the truth doesn't matter. Character mattered, because character, the way you had character was tell the truth when it was hard to tell the truth. Okay, well, now let's try to not tell the truth when it's easy to not tell the truth and see if anybody cares. Okay, so it's not when it's hard, not when it's easy. Why tell the truth? How about let's take it a step further? How about making stuff up?
Yeah, if it helps you, make it up.
If it helps. I mean, Harry Reid said that.
Yeah.
He was proud of the lie that he said on the Senate floor. I just got a call. Mitt Romney, hey, he didn't pay any taxes. Now it's out there. He's got to answer for it.
Then when he's called on it a year or two later, he's like, well, he didn't get elected, did he?
Yeah, I have
That's
no problem.
That's how he justified it.
Right. I have no problem with that.
He
didn't get elected. The ends justify the means. Character matters.
Unbelievable. It's really,
you know, the line that keeps coming to my head every day now, which concerns me because it feels more, it doesn't feel like it's just kind of popping into my head for no reason. It feels like a, I don't know, it feels true to me. With terror and slaughter return, the gods of the copybook headings. We have come so far away from the truth, and we have lived our lives. Look at what's happening at Fox News. We left Fox News, and what did I say? Do you guys remember what I said the last few weeks or few months we were there? Remember, I was like, we have got to get out of here. I don't know when it's going to happen, but
it's going to implode.
It's going to implode. This whole place is going to implode, and we don't want to be anywhere near this place.
Said that many times.
I mean, almost every day. I got so, again, I see things like a flat wall, so when I feel things, you know, it feels like it's going to happen right now. This is what it was. Like, this place is going to come down, and when it comes crashing down, it's going to be ugly, and we don't want to be within 100 miles.
And those two Murdoch sons have big plans for continuing the destruction of Fox News as it currently exists.
Correct.
They don't want anything to do
But what is the problem with Fox News? What was the problem? Go back to that poem. I thought of this yesterday as I was thinking about the implosion of Fox News.
Lately it's been all GOP.
When all men are paid for existing, and no man must pay for his sins. That's where we are at. All men are just paid for existing. Doesn't matter what you do. Doesn't matter, merit doesn't matter. Honest, hard work doesn't matter. Character doesn't matter. You're just paid to exist. And no man must pay for his sins. That's when the truth is restored. And the truth, when it's restored, it burns everything down with terror and slaughter return. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google search Gods of the Copybook Headings by Rudyard Kipling. It was written right after World War I, and he was warning our time and saying, this is going to happen again. Don't go down this road. And we're doing it. And I think we're approaching the end of that poem. When this thing resets, when truth resets, and it will, we can't just keep living these lies. We can't go down the road of actually thinking that we are God. And look at what our university said this week. What university was it that said the truth is mythical? That the truth doesn't exist? It's a myth? Well, you know why that?
I saw that.
Oh, yeah. You just Google search that headline. The truth is a myth. Well, why is the truth a myth? Because whose truth is it? Well, we used to agree it was God's truth. We don't agree on truth anymore. There is no truth anymore. They're now teaching in universities that truth is a myth. That there is no universal truth.
Is it Pomona College?
Yes. I got news for you. There is truth. There is truth. And when it's restored, it's going to hurt.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury. This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. David Limbaugh is going to be joining us here. We'll talk to him about the news of the day, but... he also has a new book out called The True Jesus, Uncovering the Divinity of Christ in the Gospel. And he's going to settle a dispute that's going on right now because Jeffy asked the other day that, you know, he said, I have a shot at heaven just like everybody else.
No. Oh, no.
No, no.
No.
And Pat and Stu don't think so.
No.
And
I got a shot, right?
Hey, there's no thinking about it.
I don't think so, Jeffy, but I'm still with you. I'm pitching for you, but I don't think so.
I mean, we're not his judge. I'm just saying he's going to burn in the fires of hell.
Right.
Right. You know.
For all eternity.
Right.
It's really interesting.
Always burning, never consumed.
Never consumed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think the really interesting question is not whether he's going to get in or not, but whether God will bother even bringing him up there to take a look. Like, maybe you just he just goes, oh, he's straight.
He's like, I've seen enough.
Well, yeah, we don't, you don't need to make the trip. Right. Yeah, why don't you save the, you know, save the airline mileage.
In fact, you might live forever. He might have just forgotten about you. He might just forget to even take you. You might just live forever.
I'm kind of feeling that way. Yeah.
Kind of like a cockroach. Indestructible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Except still a roach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if David wants to look under our fridge and see what's living down there. The true Jesus, David Limbaugh. Where have I heard that name before? Coming up next.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
A friend of the show and a really thoughtful, kind, and intelligent man, believe it or not, wants to be on this show. David Limbaugh, we start there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
David Limbaugh, has there ever been a time where you thought to yourself, this may be the bottom of my career, and was it today?
No. Well, many moments. Today is not the day, though. Right. No.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
Very good.
Thanks for having me on. Really a privilege.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I want to delve a little bit into you first, because you are so well known as a political guy, but that's not what drives you,
right?
And you've done now this is your third on Christ, right?
Right.
And you're writing really comprehensive books on the gospel, and I mean, as you read this book, The True Jesus, it's like as if, you read the gospel, you're getting lost, you don't know, you're breaking it all down and explaining what he meant by it, what is happening. I mean, you really delve into that. Tell me about you and your journey.
I started out. We grew up in a church. It was a good church. I think the message didn't really catch on with me, and it's probably because I was so scatterbrained and just didn't get engaged for so many years. And then when I was a young adult, I always was a seeker, and I always believed in God, but I didn't believe in the God of the Bible. Didn't disbelieve. I just wasn't engaged enough.
Okay, what is that? What is that? What is the God of the Bible that you understood then?
Well, I didn't know if Jesus was, I remember, is Jesus the Son of God? I didn't know if he was just a prophet or a deity.
You believe that he did live?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But truthfully, that isn't even a great accomplishment intellectually because I didn't engage. I only believed it because my parents told me. I didn't ever even give it a thought, which is embarrassing and shameful, but I didn't.
But that's the way everybody is.
Yeah.
I mean, on more than just that, I think most of us, I credit my alcohol and drug abuse for waking me up. Because I don't know if I would have ever found the truth had I not burned myself down to the ground.
It's so interesting you say that, and I don't think it's cliched. I think people that hit rock bottom have a better chance of meeting Christ because, you know, as they say, there's amazing. No atheists in foxholes.
Right.
When we're down, and if you have a blessed life, and I've had a pretty blessed life, You You think you're self-sufficient. You're your own God. I don't mean that blasphemously. I don't mean it literally. But you just think, why do I need one?
Yeah, why would I question my life if it's going well?
Yes.
I don't need anything else. It's going well.
Exactly.
I mean, I've said this, and I'm so torn. When I speak at churches, if I ever talk about my conversion and my life at all, I'll say, look, I don't want kids. I am not sending the message, burn yourself down to the ground. But I needed the redemptive power of Christ so much. I mean, David, I stood in the waters of baptism. Pat baptized me. And we wept for how long before you get the words out. Because he knew what this would mean to me, because he knew I was taking it seriously. And I was crying because I was crying out to him saying, You're promising me. If you don't come through with the peace that you promised, if I do what you tell me to do, you're not real. You're not God.
Right.
And when you really need it like that, oh my gosh, the fullness of it is amazing.
Yes, and that's a great story and great truth. Seek and you shall find. Knock and the door will be open to you. It's open to everyone, and I make that point, not I make it, but I record that point that the Gospels record because it's so important. People dismiss that. But I will say this, that even though I was blessed, continue to be blessed, and we don't wish harm upon ourselves or other people just so we can find...
Oh, yeah.
But it's not the only way. I also was always curious. Why? How did... You know, the big questions. How did we get here and all that? And you look at the glory of God's original design, and you say, it has to be God that created us, but you don't know what God's nature is. You don't know anything about Him. You don't know about His Son, Jesus Christ.
It's intelligent design.
Intelligent design, I meant to say. So good. And... So I began seeking and reading everything I could find and discovering Christianity's truth claims are backed up by evidence.
Did you read, because like when I first started, I went to school and Pat said to me, you're going to Yale? You're going to find the opposite. And I did. I found all the arguments against God.
Absolutely.
But it was because of those arguments that I actually found Him. You know what I mean? And I'm rock solid. Did you go through the period
Totally. Why would an all-loving God who is all-powerful permit evil in the world? And, of course, now that's a reason. It's a pillar of my faith rather than a reason for skepticism. But it's Lee Strobel's story in his case for Christ. I hate to promote another thing on this show, but he's a friend, and I should. It's a great movie. Oh, it's a moving movie. And he set out to disprove the gospel, and he ended up being slayed by it. That's an awesome story. And it's really what happened to me in a less dramatic way. I didn't set out to disprove it because I really wanted it to be true. I was on the right team. I wanted to be on that team. I just couldn't embrace it until I studied it, and the evidence overwhelmed me.
So was there a pivot in your life? Was there a moment where you felt like, I've got to change?
Yes. Intellectually, and I don't mean to say I'm real brilliant, I mean the intellectual thinking through things and studying kind of intellectual.
Yeah.
Studied books by Paul Little, Know What and Why You Believe, Josh McDowell, Norman Geiser, all the great apologists, and reading the Bible itself. And the real pivotal moment intellectually was when I was exposed to the Messianic prophecies, the unbelievable prophecies that were written in many cases hundreds of years before Christ's birth. And he realized all of them. He fulfilled all those prophecies.
You talk about some of them.
Yes, absolutely. And so it was after that that I trusted Christ. But I'm saying intellectually, I had to get over these hurdles so that I could open up.
Isn't it amazing how so many people dismiss, just look at the prophecies of Israel being restored.
Oh.
At no point in human history has anything like Israel ever happened. Never. And then to add on top of it that it was all foretold thousands of years ago. It's destruction, it's scattering, it's bringing back together from all corners of the earth, it's reestablishment. I mean, that's incredible in and of itself. And people dismiss it.
It gives you goosebumps. And when God set apart or called Abram, Abram at the time, he later named Abraham, go to the land I will show you. I will make a great nation out of you. I will bless all people through you. So he sent Abraham from the land of the Chaldeans, to Canaan. And he formed a nation through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and David, the line of kings. And he said he would bless all people. And so Christ, you can trace his lineage through David, through Abraham, all the way back. And he will reign forever in the promised land. And he came originally to the promised land, which was guaranteed to Israel as an everlasting possession. And as you say, they were dispersed many times. And after 2,000 years, most nations lose their identity, national identity, after 3, 4, 5 generations. After 2,000 years, the Israelites came back to the people, to that land. And in 1948, it was reestablished, as you know.
We haven't been scattered, and we've almost lost our identity.
Yes, and then those 5 or 6 Arab nations around Israel tried to destroy that tiny little nation, and it reared up and kicked their rear ends. Mm-hmm. Is that not totally exciting? Is that not God at work? And they kept trying to do it, 67, 73, and Israel trying. That's why I know. I was just in Israel 10 days ago, and I came back. First time I've ever been, which is, as you know, a spectacular experience.
How did you write 3 books on the Bible, and now is the first time you went to Jerusalem and Israel?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I don't know. I rely so heavily on what other people, the other people's studies.
It's totally different. It's a game changer in life.
Yes.
If I could be king and say, we're going to spend money on one thing, it would be, everybody should go to Israel.
Yeah.
It will change your life. Your understanding of the world, your understanding of your place in it, of God, everything, totally changes.
Yes.
Totally changes.
And this idea, see, that Israel ought to give back some of the land that they took after being attacked, the Golan Heights, where they can see Syria. Yeah. And they can't afford to give that land back because they don't want... They don't want to destroy other nations. Other nations want to destroy them.
Jeffy and I stood at the top of the Golan Heights. You know that cliff?
Yes.
And we stood up there, and everybody's talking about the Golan Heights. They should give the lions back. Until you stand on that land.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, you stand there, and you're like, that's suicide.
Suicide.
You cannot do it. It's suicide.
Plus, Israel tried to give back some of the land and establish a two-state solution, and they reject it. They want to be victims. No offense to any people out there listening, but it's fact. And I don't understand why we go through this charade.
Nobody even knows that they were given a country at the same time. Palestine was set up when Israel was set up.
Yes.
And they rejected that. And
yes.
very few people even know that.
Right.
I hate to promote somebody else's stuff, just like David did.
But what
don't
the heck?
Mention
David
the name. Just did. Don't mention the name.
Dennis Prager, Prager University.
He's awesome. He is so awesome.
Yeah. What that guy? He just had lunch in town, and he was doing a fundraiser for his university.
Yeah.
And so I went. He didn't know I was going to show up, and we bought a table, and we all went from the office. And I'm sitting there, and the look in his eyes when he walked out, and he was like, Glenn Beck. And I said to him, what you've done, Dennis, I can only dream of doing. I feel like a worm when I look at how he's actually impacting the culture. But he did something on Israel about the two-state solution. Who actually is trying to settle it, and who wants to be a victim?
Yes.
And it's brilliant in 3 minutes.
In fact, Dennis Prager is one of the clearest thinkers and communicators. I resent him.
You know what it is? You know what it is, honestly, I think? You spend much time with Jewish people.
Oh, yeah.
Their intellect, because of the way they learn the Torah...
I totally agree.
...is...
How about Ben Shapiro?
Yeah.
My buddy.
I hate him, too. The word Israel means to wrestle with the Lord, and that is in their heritage. They wrestle... And so intellectually, they're just rigorous.
In fact, Ben Shapiro told me that I hope I'm misquoting him, and I apologize, Ben, if I am, that his rigorous training in the Torah and reading it is really what helped him through Harvard Law School, make Harvard Law School easier.
Oh,
of course, he's so smart, it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah.
But
I will tell you, I think there's a direct correlation between smart and Torah school.
I think there's good point. Yeah. Plus, they're disciplined, too. Yeah. So disciplined.
Yeah. Wow, that sounded racist, didn't it?
At least it was a compliment.
All right, back with David Limbaugh. His new book is The True Jesus, Uncovering the Divinity of Christ in the Gospel. It is, we were talking yesterday in the hallway about Dominic Crossan. It's kind of the opposite of Dominic Crossan, who, remember, Stu, we had him on one Easter years ago, and we had him on, and I thought he had a really interesting take at things and yada, yada, and it was right before Easter, and we got to the end of the interview, and I said, so, do you believe the crucifixion? He's like, oh, no, none of that ever happened. And I remember being on the air like, happy Easter, everybody. I mean, crazy.
Can you explain to me why a guy like John Dominic Crossan, and I've been exposed to him early on, and this isn't a cut, I don't know the guy personally, why does he devote his whole life to undermining something? It's like he's got demons. And I don't know him. I'm just saying, a guy like him, isn't it curious they would devote their whole life to something they don't believe in, to disbelieve it? What, are Christians going around killing people? No. So what's his motivation? Christianity is a positive force for the country. Why didn't he leave it alone?
I don't know. He's one of the theologians for the Catholic Church, though, isn't he? He's involved with part of, you know, that kind of that.
I don't know, but
the believing, non-believing, we believe, but we don't believe in any of it kind of part.
Well,
of
the Catholics I know totally do believe, and they would reject his.
Oh, no, the Catholics I know, too.
Yeah. He's an outright atheist, isn't he? Or am I wrong?
No, I don't think he is. He just doesn't believe in the what he calls magic tricks.
He doesn't believe. You know. He denies the supernatural, and yet, if he believes in God, he has to believe God created everything, and nothing is a bigger miracle than snapping the world into existence, breathing the world in existence.
Right. I mean, this is, you don't believe in the supernatural. Well, where did this come from? I mean, where did it start? How did it start? There's something that we don't understand. We call it supernatural because we don't understand it. You go back, you know, 200 years with a flashlight.
Yeah.
They're going to think it's supernatural. Well, that's who we are compared to God. In fact, we're not even that. We're the cavemen.
Yeah.
And it's a searchlight,
right,
for us.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
David Limbaugh is here. He's the author of a new book, The True Jesus, Uncovering the Divinity of Christ in the Gospel. The one thing, you know, I went to school, as we told you, and I was looking for the truth. I just want the truth. And so I took the history departments at Yale, the history of what's called early Christology, the making of the image of Christ. Well, that'll make you a non-believer so fast your head will spin. But what it did do was give me a rock-solid understanding of who this guy was as a man. You'd add the theology on top of it, but to know how things worked back then, what the world was like when he was in it, and why the Gospels were sometimes written the way they were, that's kind of what you're doing here, except you don't throw out all the divinity stuff.
Right, right. And, the Gospels do portray Christ as a fully human and fully divine, and we've said that, but it's when you really study them, you see his humanity. He wept over Jerusalem, and he walked among the people, and even when he came back in bodily resurrection form, they touched him. He was real. Mm-hmm. He wasn't some spirit mystical creature.
How did they not know? And I know you address this in the book. Come on.
Yeah.
How did they not know?
Well, I think the Jewish messianic expectation was a military and political conqueror. And that's what the prophecies mostly said. There was also a smattering of prophecies, quite a few prophecies, that about a suffering servant. You can read Isaiah 53 and Psalm 22 and give you goosebumps again about how accurately they portray Christ's crucifixion. But according to Michael Heiser, who's a PhD and a friend of mine through studying this stuff, It was presented in a mosaic and not necessarily directly. So only after looking through the New Testament lenses can we see that the suffering servant was also going to be the Messiah. And it is really Jesus. But they expected the Messiah to be someone who would conquer the Roman oppressors.
So I have a theory on Judas that I'd like to share, because I know you covered Judas.
Right.
We'll get into that. David Limbaugh, The True Jesus, available in bookstores right now and online. The True Jesus by David Limbaugh. More with him on this and News of the Day coming up.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
David Limbaugh, we're just having a conversation off air. We're going to get back to his book, The True Jesus. We're just having a conversation about The Flash, of all things, and how our kids, I have a 13-year-old, your son is 12.
Yes.
Our kids are experts about everything that is not important.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely Welcome. Everything. I worry, I don't know about you, but I look at my kid, and part of me is so glad he's not worried about the things I'm worried about right now.
Yeah.
But I do worry it. I mean, you know, I'm a catastrophist. I do see my son, you know, in an end times sort of apocalyptic Blade Runner situation where he's like, I don't know, is there a gaming system to this? Oh, I mean,
this is just like episode 142, section B.
Oh, yeah. He knows every episode of Doctor Who, The Flash. He can tell me, Dad, that's Earth 18.
I know.
I'm like, oh, okay. Duh.
And they're not showing off. It's just part of their makeup.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking there's a possibility that these skills, that as Napoleon Dynamite would say, these skills they can apply later. Because they really are intelligent. This stuff is heady stuff. It just doesn't matter, but it's heady stuff.
Yeah, no, and they know it inside and out.
Yes,
the gaming
do.
Thing, I just keep thinking,
yes, they do.
Well, I know he'll be on the right side of a drone.
I know.
He'll be flying the drones.
With all due respect, I'm so glad he's not he's in school and not listening to your show right now.
So David Limbaugh wrote The True Jesus, Uncovering the Divinity of Christ in the Gospel, and he writes it in such a way that it's really, really fascinating, especially if you know the Gospels, it's great, but even if you don't, it really helps you get yourself into it and really understand how it happened, what happened, etc. Judas, I look at Judas, and I always grew up being taught that Judas was, you know, with the devil, and he was, you know, evil and everything else. I look at Judas in a totally different light now. I look at Judas as a real zealot, because that's, you know, if you read Josephus, that's the way they describe Jesus. He was one of the zealots up in the mountains.
Right.
There were a lot of people that were claiming that they were the Messiah at the time, and they lived up in the mountains, and they'd come down and you know, preach repentance and everything else. And so they were looking for a warrior. And I think Judas was one of those guys. And when he realized, we're coming into town, and you're not going to overthrow this. You're not the guy.
Yeah.
I think he was so disillusioned because he couldn't understand the message of peace and of changing the world the way Christ was looking at it, that he thought, you've betrayed me, you've lied to me. And so you kind of look at Judas and say, I mean, not that he was a good guy, but I understand. I understand how he got there.
Yeah. And I have no idea if what he was like, and it's a plausible theory to me, not that I'm any arbiter of plausible theories, but I don't know any scriptural evidence for that, and I pretty much rely on that, but there may be.
But there's no scriptural evidence of any other theory.
No, I'm not saying, absolutely.
Right.
And it's a fascinating thought because I will say another point I want to make about Judas, since you brought him up, I don't really fault him in one way either. Jesus was born to die. He and the Holy Spirit and the Father created us knowing we were going to fall, and knowing that the Father would have to send the Son to her earth to become a human being and to die for our sins. So he was the only person, as Bishop Fulton Sheen said, who ever lived his life backwards from the cross forward. It's all about the cross. He was born to die. So if Judas hadn't betrayed him, someone else would, in God's providential sovereignty. Now, That doesn't mean Judas was a good guy for doing it, but and that doesn't mean he had didn't have free will in doing it. But we owe him because Christ, if Christ had not died, we wouldn't be able to live. And I say that kind of a mixed thing. I don't mean we owe him, glad he betrayed him. But it's an interesting thing. Christ came to die for our sins.
I love a guy who just casually mentions Bishop Fulton Sheen. I never knew who this guy was until somebody said to me, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes.
And they said, you remind me so much of Bishop Fulton Sheen.
Wow, that's a great compliment.
Yeah, they didn't mean it that way.
Okay.
What they meant was his show with the chalkboards and being able to explain everything. And I went to the Museum of Television History to look up this bishop in his robes on television explaining communism and explaining...
Yes.
I mean, it's a different world.
You know, in his book on the life of Christ, I quoted that in one of my books, and I went back, and it was a really influential book and for me. And he's talking about communism like my dad was.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, totally. We have lost... I mean, that's in a time when Christianity was convicted that if you become a godless society, you're done.
And communism was nothing if not godless.
Right.
Yeah.
It was evil.
Evil.
It was evil. And it still is evil,
yes,
as we see in North Korea.
Yes.
We're not willing to say that anymore.
No. And they slaughtered 100 million people, possibly, in the 20th century. 30 million in Soviet Union and Red China, all over the place. Cambodia. People just...
North
the
Korea.
Left give them a pass because they think the logical extent... Well, I don't know. I don't even want to get into that tangled web.
let me switch gears with you. What do you think happens to... And I don't want to talk about your brother, but, I mean, you're Limbaugh. Yesterday was an end of an era. There are two icons that stood in the doorway and stopped the Huns from rushing in. One is Rush Limbaugh, and the other has been Bill O'Reilly. Bill is not a movement conservative, but he was a cultural conservative.
Right.
And they made him into, you know, the most evil conservative man on the planet, which I don't think he was. I think he was more common sense, you know, kind of just middle of the road kind of guy. But now that he's gone, and the way he was taken out was from pressure from Media Matters, and advertiser loss. I said yesterday, okay, so now who's the big dog that you're going to have to get off? Media Matters going to have to get off? Sean Hannity. So Sean will be a target. Then what's, if Fox is gone, you know, we're hearing about the Murdochs, you know, changing all of Fox and wanting to make it mainstream. And, you know, you're in talks about Oprah Winfrey.
Right.
Fox gone. It brings all of the focus onto two places, small little things on the internet that are struggling to stay alive. All of us are struggling to stay alive because we're in our infancy, and talk radio. What does Bill O'Reilly leaving mean, do you think?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, I think on the TV show, we don't know. We got to be clear to differentiate this, or I do, that we don't know what the facts were.
Correct.
Whether it's every bit true or every bit false or partially true.
Correct.
And partially false.
And if it's true, then he should go away. We can't tolerate that.
Yeah.
Right. So to dismiss, if we don't know that.
But
so
that's right. But I don't want people to misconstrue this intentionally, what
yes.
we're saying. We're not saying, don't look at the evidence.
Correct.
The evidence speaks for itself.
Correct.
What we are saying, I don't want to speak for you here, but I think what we are saying is they are salivating. They've been salivating, the Media Matters and the other leftist extremists, to go after, as you say, conservative icons. Conservative icons. And they do it all the time. They're relentless. That's what they exist for. I don't think they would deny it. They claimed O'Reilly's scalp, didn't they?
And
if they didn't, I apologize, but I think I read something.
No, they did.
Yep,
they did.
Here's what I want to point out. In terms of people trying to figure out the way the left and the right, and this is kids that go to school. You know the best way to tell people about the left and what they really are about? they always had, including when I was in college, the what they had on us was they claimed to have compassion. So you send conservatives to school, paint them as racist, bigots, uncompassionate. That's why liberals are liberals, because we aren't compassionate. It's a lie, but that's what they have their foot in the door, and that's how they convince kids to go to the other side. They're the ones who are hateful, intolerant, uncompassionate. And I have some young kids I've talked to who have experienced the salivating meanness of the left, how the intolerance. They'll never be a liberal now because they now know how mean these people are. Now, this is, let me give you an example. We've mentioned this. No conservative ever tries to suppress the speech of a liberal. None that I know. We believe in the marketplace of ideas and that our ideas will triumph if given a full airing. Liberals apparently either don't believe that or they don't care. They want to suppress us. And I mean that. They want to suppress our speech, our religious freedom. And evidence of that is they are triumphant that this happened to O'Reilly. I can't imagine going after a liberal icon. I don't want to get those people off the air. In fact, they're a great advertisement for conservatism because they are so mean and intolerant. The more they flourish in their little world, the better they expose themselves.
I think MSNBC has done more for the conservative movement
exactly
than Fox in all of its years.
Plus, I don't wish ill on them personally.
No.
I can't stand what Bill Maher stands for and the way he treats people, but I don't wish him ill. These guys, and I don't think he actually wishes some people ill, but the point, and he's a free speech guy anyway.
Yeah.
He's one of the few liberals.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
he's
crazy. He's very, very liberal, but at times very libertarian. And so he's a mix. And sometimes he's exactly right. And sometimes you're like, what?
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree. But most liberals that are prominent and even that aren't, even on college campuses, they are intolerant. And they want to shut you down because they deem your ideas so toxic that they can't be aired, because if they're aired, they will lead to violence. And do you realize how ridiculous they are? In the name of stopping violence that could come from speech, theoretically, conservative speech could cause violence, which is absurd, by the way. But let's accept it theoretically. They will commit violence to stop speech that could possibly lead to violence.
Amazing.
They're amazing. And they're so unself-reflective that they don't even realize how absurd they are.
Where do you think is coming? Where are we if we don't turn a corner and we keep going down this road? Where are we in 5 or 10 years?
Well, I happen to be an optimist. I hope not a naive optimist, because I do believe we're in a war. And I mean cultural war, political war. The left wants to take us out. The left wants to triumph. It's totalitarian. Its mindset, its worldview is totalitarian. If they had their way, they would wipe us out. I don't mean physically and literally, although you wonder, but intellectually. So there'd be one type of thought out there. They're trying. What frustrates me is conservatives who don't realize we're in a war, and so they lay back and they don't fight back. George W. Bush, what a sweetheart, what a God-fearing man. He wouldn't fight back. He wouldn't even defend himself. We have to defend. We have to be alert, vigilant every day. And if we are, we will beat them back because we, listen, that's why Trump won.
So, David, let me ask you this. Do you think, I could talk to you for another hour. Do you think that, because I am trying to reach out to the people who can, I'm not going to reach out to Nancy Pelosi and the people in Washington. They're not going to change.
I got her number.
Yeah, no, yeah, I got her number too. I'm not talking about the political people. I'm talking about, I think there's a ton of people who are Democrats who are saying, I don't want any more of this either. I mean, I think there's a majority of people that are looking for reasonable people that, you know, why can't we get back together? And I think the edges are going to lose their power if they don't clasp us in leg irons, either the fascists or the communists. You know, I think if the people will rise up and stay together, there's more that we agree on than we disagree.
Yeah, and even most liberals, I think, I don't look at liberals as evil. I look at some of the liberal leaders as borderline evil and fooling people and duping them into thinking we're evil, and so they got to watch. And I'm not a naive optimist, as I say, but I think, and while politics is downstream from culture. We have to work on the culture. We have to be influential in the culture. And that gets us back to Christianity. We have to be obedient to Christ, and hopefully we'll influence the culture. We'll be ambassadors for Christ, and we'll have a positive influence, and it'll go upstream into politics, hopefully.
The problem is, in America, is our kids are not getting the teaching of the scriptures that we had. They don't relate to it anymore.
No.
David's got a great book that might help bridge that gap. It's called The True Jesus by David Limbaugh, number 4 last week.
They just announced it, so it'll be in 2 weeks, but there's a delay.
Congratulations. Right, yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And a great book and well worth your time, The True Jesus, David Limbaugh.
Thanks so much for having me, Glenn. Really appreciate it.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. We're just sitting here just talking to David Limbaugh. Delightful man. And a great book that you should pick up. Anything that we're not concerned that the world is going to vaporize by Monday, right? That was last week. We worried about the moon spinning out of orbit and crashing into us this week, or is it still just nuclear vaporization?
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.